When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks everyone for tuning in to ESPN Crick Info Power Play. I'm Valkyrie Baines, joined by my co-host Firoz Munda, and we recently caught up with Australia's very own Grace Harris while they were just about to wrap up their tour of Bangladesh, having played a T20 and ODI series over there before heading off for some well-earned player leave. She spoke about all sorts of things. As you can imagine, she's such a wonderful character in our game, Grace Harris. Shall we take a listen? We're joined by a very special guest. You want runs? She can score 136 off 59, ask Brisbane Heat. You need wickets? She can get you two off her first five balls in the last over of the game to win it for you, ask UP Warriors. It's Australia's very own Grace Harris. Grace, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to the chat.
Now, we'd usually start off talking to you about cricket, but we understand you're a bit of a DIY queen. And Firoz has found herself in the midst of a household emergency involving walls that need scraping, ceilings that need replacing, water leaks, water stoppages, no electricity. Do you think you can help her out and offer her some home renovation tips based on your own experiences?
Definitely wear protective gear. So I highly recommend mask and gloves because you got to protect the assets of your lungs and your hands. And outside of that, get ready for just a lot of hard work, a lot of elbow grease.
That doesn't sound very encouraging at all. Thanks, Grace. But tell us about that project of yours. We obviously insta-stalked you because that's how we do our research here. Yes. On Power Play. And it looks, I mean, you look like a pro, not like me. You did not have a three-month-old kitten sitting on your lap while you were trying to figure out how to work out your home renovation.
No, I just had a five-year-old Dalmatian. No, I had a lot of help from family members, but we've done some dabbling in a bit of home reno. So the house that I recently purchased is my first home, and I wanted to change up the layout inside, so I got rid of a lot of walls except for the kitchen and the bathroom because they're a little bit expensive for me at the moment. So pulled a horsehair ceiling down, which is quite interesting and very heavy and hard work. But all in all, it was my father and I that got to work and made sure that everything was up to standard using a qualified builder and electricians. So we didn't do everything ourselves. We just love a bit of demolition work, and I think it really gets the anger out. If you ever get out for a duck, I'm telling you right now, pull a couple of walls down the ceiling and you're good to go. Yeah.
Brilliant advice. Grace, I mean, you mentioned buying your first home, and that's something so many female cricketers on the podcast tell us, you know, that they're finally able to use the earnings of being a professional cricketer for living and just, you know, something that we all dream of doing. So just on a serious note, I mean, is that the way that your life has changed since professionalization and all the deals, you know, the big bash and the other stuff you've been able to do?
Yeah, definitely has had a big impact in my life. It's basically when I first started playing cricket, I actually worked full-time for 5 years, and the very first contract that I signed was actually not even worth money. It was just simply health insurance, and if I got injured at a training session, then the liability was with Queensland Cricket or with the company or, you know, the board that I was signed with. So moving through this kind of transition of semi-professional to professional, that's probably been one of the biggest changes to the women's game is that you can kind of thrive now as a professional cricketer, not kind of just survive. That's my way to kind of compare it, I guess. It was very much a cricket was like a hobby that you kind of did outside work hours when I first started, but now you can actually take it fairly seriously and you get to train and there's a lot of facilities that you can use and there's a lot of even off-field management that we didn't have when I was first started playing too. So we have sports psychs and dietitians and really like qualified strength and conditioning coaches as well as qualified coaches and team managers. So it's not kind of just even the pay itself. It's a lot of, it's multifaceted how the game is developed.
So looking back to when you first started out, and you've sort of mentioned the changes in the, you know, you're playing, the playing conditions and that sort of thing. But how did you even start out in the game when it was, you know, at first a hobby?
I started through club cricket more than anything. And at club cricket, my club coach was an ex-Australian and Queensland female cricketer. And I guess from there, I developed a keen interest in it from her and the playing group that I was with at my club. So names of Jodie Fields, Melissa Bulow, played against Kirsten Pike, for instance. And I guess I didn't really even know at the time that there was an Australian women's cricket team, or I didn't really understand that, or I didn't know that there was a state team either, but they had this kind of group that were all state contracted and it just seemed like they had a ton of fun outside of some horrendous fitness sessions. Which didn't draw me in initially, but I kind of really just enjoyed the game of cricket itself. I've always found it fun to play. But to see their friendships and the camaraderie, I guess, at that earlier stage kind of lured me into staying involved in the game. And then since then, it's just gotten a little bit more professional and more developed, and I've understood the game a little bit more, so I can thoroughly enjoy watching the game as well as playing it now, and I guess develop my own friendships through it.
What did some of those fitness sessions look like, and are they much different to what you have to put up with now?
They are much different. I remember, for instance, they chatted about just some running sessions where a few of the players may have had to, you know, excuse themselves off to the side while they just hurled a little bit and then got their breath back and then started again. So and there might have been a couple of players that had to try and eat a meat pie behind in the car park out the back, because if they got spotted, you know, they might have been in a bit of trouble. But when I was younger, obviously, I had an esky at fine leg, so I kind of looked and I was like, nah, that won't be me. I've got my snacks every second over and drinks and whatnot. And that kind of was another thing that kept me in the game, I guess. It wasn't always terrible, just to jog fine leg to fine leg and then whip out, I don't know, cheese and bickies and lollies and some cut up fruit if I needed. But I was kind of cheeky as a younger player, and I'd stuff lollies in my pockets if I ever had to field at slips, and then in between balls I would whip a snake out of my pocket, chuck it in my mouth. If the ball came in, if they nicked off one day, I just went like from mouth to ball and just caught it one handed. The captain wasn't very happy with me. And I was like, what can you do? At least I caught it still. I think if I dropped it, I probably would have been in more trouble. But
exactly. As long as you can get the job done, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much, that's how I've rolled a lot throughout my career. If I do it, then it's done. And if I don't do it, then you can say something about it.
So, Grace, it sounds like I almost want to ask you, at what point did you start taking cricket seriously? Because this just sounds like a hoot, right? It sounds like you were just having the best time ever. But I get the feeling you're going to say you don't take it that seriously anyway, right?
No, I guess there was probably one or two moments throughout my career where I thought, like, ooh, okay. One in particular moment was probably when I had a coach that really was, this was before we were fully professional, and this coach basically just said that cricket isn't fun, you're here to win, and you've got to, like, you're basically too talented or naturally talented to not test yourself to become the best cricketer that you possibly could be. And in my head I was like, yeah, well, kind of like, if I eat a few more donuts, I might be happier overall. Like, you know, ice cream never really hurt anybody as long as you're a bit more active. Like, and I guess I got the other point was probably I got a couple of injuries where I was trying to probably go too hard, I guess, in more the fitness work or to try and apparently be this professional player. And I think it's where you learn what makes you the best player. So, yeah, you might be able to run a 2K time trial really quickly, but at the end of the day, you've got to be able to score runs and you've got to be able to take wickets and kind of last a whole game. So I may have tried it their way, or I may have tried to play cricket how other people play it, and it just didn't work for me. So then I kind of just went, well, I know what does work and I know how to get the most out of my skill set or my body, or how to, and there are, it's relative to be able to play this entire year and the amount of cricket that's in the calendar now, I guess, compared to back then, because cricket itself has gotten a lot more demanding. So more games, you got to be a little bit fitter, but outside of that, you do have to kind of have the mental capacity to, I guess, last the whole season and to keep enjoying it the whole season as well, because if you're going to take it too seriously, sometimes it's a bit like, this can be a job. You know, you'd rather work
in it. Actually, it's a great point you make there, and something we've covered a bit here on Crick Info in terms of, like, the fitness tests. Everybody knows what happened with Dane van Niekerk before last year's T20 World Cup. South Africa have had several issues along those lines. So I just want to touch on that point a little bit deeper. You know, I know during the WPL, there were lots of, like, jokey conversations around you enjoying the chai. And, I mean, we've spoken here about donuts and ice cream and all sorts. Do you feel like you have to be this kind of ripped, you know, model type figure in order to be a professional sports person? Or are you quite strong in saying, listen, actually, we can do things and look a little bit different and still enjoy our lives, and we don't have to, as you say, run the 2K really quickly?
No, I'm probably genetically blessed in that my metabolism is a bit higher than others, and I can probably get away with punching a few donuts or chocolate cake over here, which others probably can't do as much. But, no, I think it comes down to, it's all relative. I think if you end up with a lot of soft tissue injuries and you're constantly enjoying the Powerades and, you know, donuts or ice creams, then you probably might need to limit it or just cut out one or two a week. But I'm all about moderation, and you got to be able to live as a human being. You can't be an athlete your entire life. It just, I think that drains you a little bit more than helps you with your game, for instance. So I'm not against fitness testing, and I can understand where the SSSM staff come from and that kind of approach to the game. But at the same time, you got to be able to live your life too, because you only get one shot at it. So you got to do it the best that you can.
I guess that balance between sort of work, you know, playing cricket and living is becoming more of a juggle for female cricketers at the top of their game, with, you know, the schedule just getting packed, the franchise leagues increasing, that sort of thing. We're currently speaking to you while Australia are in Bangladesh playing a couple of white ball series just toward the back end of that. What's it been like sort of over there, and what's the rest of your, you know, your year looking like? Because you basically wound up in Bangladesh shortly after the WPL. So you've been on the go for a while now. How are you coping?
Yeah, the Bangladesh tour at the moment's felt a little bit like a COVID trip. We haven't had too many explorations outside of the hotel and outside of cricket. But outside of that, we're just trying to obviously prepare for a World Cup that's going to be here much later this year. And given that this is our last tour before our player leave, I think everyone's just trying to get in and finish on a high, I guess, for the season, and really just try and get as much as we can while we're here in Bangladesh in the conditions, and what's going to work best for our team with a view of moving forward. But for us, I think we're just excited. It's been a very challenging and long season for the Australian women's cricket team, and they've probably played a lot of cricket recently. So I think a lot of the girls, they're looking forward to this next month off and then starting up before the next series, I think, is against India. So should be good fun. But I think, yeah, everyone's kind of looking forward just to finish off and learn as much as possible as we can out of this white ball tour in Bangladesh.
Can you talk to us a little bit about what it's like being part of this Australian women's team? I mean, they've just been so dominant for so long, or you have just been so dominant for so long. What's it like being a part of that, and what sort of things are the teams sort of constantly doing to make sure that they stay on top?
I guess that's a pretty layered question. You have to kind of sum up who you have to kind of prepare for who you're going to play against, which is what I think this team do very well. I think they also get the most out of the ability within the squad. We've obviously tried a couple of things recently just to test our adaptability and our resilience. And I must say it's definitely a team that has one of the higher resilience levels that I've ever been a part of. This season, for instance, we've missed Christmas. We were Christmas and New Year's in India, Easter in Bangladesh here. So if you think about how you live as a human being and you take away the key holidays of your year where you'd spend a lot of time around your family, it can be challenging-ish. Not that cricket's too challenging. But I think with that mentality, the girls all really get along and they kind of just make the most of every opportunity that they get. And it's been quite fun to be around. And the coaching staff are very relaxed and they allow you to still be a human being as long as you take cricket semi-seriously. So, you know,
everything you describe is like of this team that's quite relaxed, that's really loving things. But, and of course, why wouldn't you? You know, World Cup champions over and over and over again. But is there a sense that other teams are starting to maybe catch up a little bit? You know, we've seen big results. Sri Lanka won a cup series in England. They beat South Africa here the other day. Bangladesh have won some games as well. Do you feel like, okay, the others are starting to catch up and we got to look behind our shoulders just to see like what's happening?
Well, I think there hasn't always, I don't know, a lot of people talk about the gap that the Australian women's cricket team has. But to be honest, England, Australia, India, they all come now with franchise cricket. They all have a high-performance program. It's all – every country that I can think of has at least contracts now that for the women's game. So if you're going to have all the same resources, of course cricket's going to be competitive because that's – generally what happens, you know, and then it comes down to your talent and your ability to handle the mental stress, I guess, in a game or the competitiveness in the moment. And I think what Australia has done very well over the past 5-6 years is they've won those moments, the key moments. And if I think back to, you know, the India Commonwealth Games semi-final, and Harmanpreet Kaur, she jogs that second run where she gets run out. And I know her bat sticks in the ground, but if she sprinted, or what I want to say is an Australian player probably doesn't do that in that moment. They're probably running through. I haven't really seen Beth Mooney jog too in a game. So I think if you look at little key moments in games and – how the Australian women's cricket teams, some of the players have approached the moment, I think that's the difference, not some gap that's made up or just, I don't know, an imaginary line. I don't know. I don't know. But I look at key moments and I think, you know, against England, if we don't hold on to a catch at deep mid wicket, like that's probably our loss there. I think one of the games that we've played recently against them, it was to deep mid wicket, and I forget who it is, maybe Ash Gardner or someone just takes a catch. And in other games, if we drop that, that's the loss, not some gap in the game, in the women's game. So. Yeah. Yeah, we probably have, admittedly, our domestic setup. I can't fault our domestic setup. I think it is very competitive and I think it's well run. And I think we get the most opportunity to try and be placed in those pressure situations. So that way, then, if you are selected for Australia, it is just the same as you in Big Bash, and it's just simply about performing again in the moment. So, yeah, we've had the programs in place, but now that everybody's got programs in place, surely you can't keep saying that we're, you know, that's the reason that we're the best.
You mentioned a name there that our listeners' ears would have pricked up in Harmanpreet Kaur and that example. She's, I guess, the face of competitiveness, right, in Indian cricket. I'm thinking of the Bangladesh series where she got so upset and, you know, made some comments about the umpiring and so on. You've now been at the WPL. You're immersed in the Indian cricket sort of setup. Do you get that sense? You know, there are a couple of big characters. And just what was that whole experience like for you? I know you weren't in the same team as her, but what's the sense around the whole environment?
Yeah, they are. The Indian cricketers are very competitive and they're very skilled. I think they, like, you can compare it the exact same way as an Australian domestic setup. They get to play in the scenarios within a game. The WPL have brought in, you know, pressure situations, and you're on TV. So sometimes the jump from no cameras around to having cameras around. I know in the very first Big Bash League, when a couple of our games were televised, it was very much like, it's a bit of a shock to the system, or it's more of a distraction to some. And that can be just an energy drainer, is how I like to describe it. Or it can distract you enough to focus energy elsewhere, except for what you need to do on your game. And I guess with WPL, with the 100, the Big Bash, that maybe this more senior Indian players or the better Indian players, because they've been contracted for Big Bash, it's probably what they're more used to. I think some of the domestic girls, especially within UP Warriors, they're probably a couple of the games that's been their biggest kind of change. It's not so much the cricket skills itself, it's everything that comes with it. So playing in the big stadiums in front of a very loud crowd where normally you'd be able to hear the ball off the bat, and if you play RCB in RCB, you can't hear yourself think. So you've got to use every other facet of your game to try and take the catches or to try and throw in accurately and even not be so distracted by the crowd or by a streaker on the field. It's kind of the whole package that comes along with the professionalism of the game. Whereas I think with their senior trophy, they play a lot of domestic cricketers. There's no internationals to chat to or to learn off. And you do have to find yourself as a cricketer and develop your own game. And you probably need the discipline and the kind of mental drive to do it yourself.
You mentioned sort of performing in those pressure situations. And I'm just sort of curious as to what sort of things you tell yourself when you're in that kind of moment. I'll take you back to the one that I mentioned at the start. You were bowling that last over for UP Warriors against Delhi Capitals and, you know, needed wickets there, and you managed to get two, and then there was a run out as well, and that was sort of within your first five balls. I mean, what's going through your mind when you're in that situation to potentially win and ultimately win the game for your team?
That's probably not the best admittedly, I think Midge had just captained that game to try and get us to the 20th over, because I think they'd gotten off to a flyer and they were well in control, the Delhi Capitals, of that chase. And in the end, I think Midge just, it was the very first over that I'd bowled for the game. And Midge just basically said, like, look, it's out of you or it was T-Mac. And in the end, she went with pace off, which worked a treat. Because I guess with pace on, if you edge it, might just find a gap, it'll run away for four. I guess with my own bowling, they had to hit it. So, but to be honest, thought processes, I took the pressure off because I just thought, oh, they only need 10. Like, come on now. Yeah, I'm a right-handed batter and there's a right arm offy as the last over, and you only need 10 to get with fast outfields, smaller boundaries. I wanted to be in the batter's camp every day of the week. So I think the relaxing thing about it was that I kind of just took the expectation of winning off the table. I took the results out of the game. And I just thought, I just have to bowl it here. And if they hit it, then they hit it. And if they miss it, yay. And in the end, they missed a couple, so that was good. But also, I think the key wicket was really the run out of Jess Johnson. I think that was one of the clutch plays in the over. And it came from Gaia Quad, or Raja, well, she was nearly a leg slip, but she was that far in. But it was a very fast, firm, accurate throw, and Jono was well short. But I think if they make that single, that's probably the moment that you go, oh, we could have been on a bit better there, as well as probably the drop catch that went for six in the first ball.
Overall, Grace, was it I mean, obviously UP would have loved, I suppose, to go a little bit further. But overall, were you happy with the way the campaign went? And also, if you look at the way that, I guess it's so early to say, you know, which WPL teams are the ones to sort of look out for. But everyone talks about Mumbai Indians, Delhi, and maybe now RCB. So do you think the other two are sort of thinking, oh, we better do something here?
I don't really know. Like, to be honest, I think our fielding was generally the thing that let us down our entire campaign. I would I'd be willing to bet my newly renovated house that we keep one of the worst fielding sides for the competition. And if you kind of can't back up your bowlers in T20 cricket, it's a key kind of facet to the game. And I'm pretty sure our team dropped every other team's key batter at least once early in their innings in pretty much every game. So, you know, if we're creating the chances and then our batters are trying to either chase down totals or set big ones and then let down the bowlers essentially just by fumbling, dropping catches, misfields, then you're probably not going to be as successful as you want to be. But I think the skill set is there. I'd just simply probably for next season might do a bit more fielding training leading into the competition. But, no, I think UP, we beat some of the – like, if you think about it, we beat Delhi Capitals and we beat Mumbai Indians. So we're probably one of the competitive teams in the tournament. And the RCB lost by 4 runs early in the comp. That probably did hurt us a little bit too, even just mentally for our middle order. I know I got a few questions after that game about how to ice a chase. So sometimes if it doesn't go your way, it doesn't go your way. And, like, it just, yeah, well, probably I would say fielding was our worst facet of the game.
I want to tell you the stat because I know we looked it up at some point and I think it was maybe 16, maybe 18 drop catches. Maybe I've just made that up. Sorry, but it was a lot. It was definitely.
Boy, but it was. Yeah, you can't drop opposition teams or you can't drop competitions 18 times. No chance. You got nothing. Won't matter how good you bowl after that. If the batter's still skying it and you can't take catches, yeah, you're probably not winning many comps.
Let's move on to batting then. And and I guess take us back to that innings you had for the Heat, the 136 not out. And I mean, that's a long time to have a lot of stuff going through your mind. What's your favourite memory of that knock?
Probably not my bat breaking. That's not my favorite memory.
Everyone else's favorite because he hit a broken hand.
To be honest, I think it was probably one of my favorite memories from the game is just after the bat breaking and I called for the new one and I think I hit the very next ball for 6 and I must admit when I was running back to the mark with a new bat in my hand and I thought, oh, like I was hitting it so well with that other one. Like, oh, and then I thought, if I get out now, I'm gonna be sweating, like, you know, just so angry. And when it went for 6 and I thought, no, okay, like this is like it's me, it's not the weaponry, it's not the bat, it's me. Not that I'd ever blame a bat for getting out, because it, you know, a good carpenter doesn't blame his tools. But I think, to be honest, that's probably my favourite memory. Aside from, and I know this probably sucks for Kingy, but it was very early on where I slog swept Kingy for 6 in about, I don't know, the 7th over. And it was about then that I thought, like, oh, this is a really good surface and the boundaries are not big enough for me. And there's sometimes moments in your innings where you just are in a zone and it was after this one particular shot where I just thought nothing's going to stop me today. Like I'm on and I'm ready for a big one. So North Sydney obviously is quite a good batting wicket and it's quite a fast outfield too. And often if you beat the circle, it does race away for 4. So as a batter, you want to try and cash in as much as you possibly can when you're there. And that day, I just happened to have a good one.
And did you have any lucky socks on or was there a superstition around, I'm wearing this pair now, so I got to wear it again if I want to if I want to score.
No, I don't have that part of my brain working. There's no superstition for me. That doesn't work. I know there's a lot of girls that they have to sit on the same seat in the bus. They change their back group every game. You know, you got to put your left pad on first. No, if I kind of am very logical, and I think that if I haven't prepared, then I haven't prepared, and that's my own fault. And if I get beaten by a good ball, I get beaten by a good ball. But my socks were just always freedom of expression, I guess. It's the only part of the control. And if I get to have a bit of fun with it or enhance my sock game, I guess, then so be it. But I think that day I was wearing burgers and fries. They're a pair of socks that I've had for a little bit, and they're like odd. They're not the same on both sides. One side's burgers and one side's chips. But yeah, it's fun. Just good fun.
I think you were wearing those at the Commonwealth Games, which is when I first became aware of your sock thing. But they are gold.
That might be good socks then. I might have to keep them. That might be all right. I've got a couple from India that haven't won me a game yet, so I might have to whip them out next season, get a couple on the board. But no, I haven't
really.
What makes
the good sock? I'm very interested. Does it have to have like particular kinds of design or color or pattern or
I like different ones. Food always gets me, as in that's appropriate. There's probably a couple of socks that I can't wear at televised games because they've got either a swear word on or a or a not a decent figure. But I started one day just a Ronald McDonald charity. I think that's pretty much where it kicked off. And they were the big M, like the big yellow arches. And I think one side was chips. So that's kind of where I just started with them. And from there, I just continued, I guess. So it started with charity, at least.
I guess your family always know what to get you for Christmas, but
easy gift, that one.
It does seem like you're really, really close with your family, and you must be looking forward to getting back and seeing them. Can you talk a little bit about the influence that they've had on your life and on your career, and perhaps also your Nan as well, and sort of the influence that she has had on you?
Nan, her and I. We were born the same day, obviously years apart.
Oh, wow. But,
and she did pass away on our birthday. So my 30th birthday was a lot of tears and not a lot of fun. So my family did joke that this year when I turn 31, it's going to be a much bigger event and a bit more chirpier. So that's always going to be fun, I guess. But Nan, she was, I guess, a lot like myself in some ways. In she always loved a good laugh and a good cup of tea, and she never a day in her life went without bread and butter. but I guess she was a very tough and a very lovable old lady, and someone that was one of my favorite people in the world. So I with my family, I guess the on-field grace, and I guess you can be judged for your performances. And a hard day at cricket, I guess, is when you get out for a duck and you drop the winning catch, or you go for 20,000 runs off your overs. But your family see when you blow a knee out and you spend 12 months rehabbing and just gymming and not doing a lot else, and they see every version. So I've got a very supportive family, and I guess with Nan passing, we've I've got two nephews that entered the world, and hopefully there's one more either niece or nephew coming very shortly in the player leave period they're expected. So I'll be excited about that. But, yeah, Nanch is a great supporter of myself, and the attitude that she had was, where I don't take cricket too seriously, or the attitude of living your life, it definitely was inspired by her.
Oh, that is just so lovely.
Beautiful.
I've got a suspicion as well that your niece and nephew and one to come see you as fun auntie.
Oh, yeah, look, I've been trying to beat Laura to be the first name said, like Auntie Grace. I've been trying to get both my current nephews at the moment to say Auntie Grace before Auntie Laura, and I reckon my name might be a little bit easier because it's, one syllable, so I could be in with a shot here. But, yeah, it's exciting, and they're up and about, and I've had babysitting duties for a couple of days, and I tell you what, 18-month-olds are very hard work to get you up with. They're on the go. And they're also at the age where now they're monkey see, monkey do, monkey say. So we definitely have to watch if you stub a toe on the furniture. We definitely have to be mindful of what comes out of your mouth. Because I don't want to be that auntie. Naughty words. good fun.
Oh, that's lovely. Before we let you go, we need to ask you our Build Your Ultimate Cricketer quiz, if we may.
Okay.
So we're going to throw you a few categories, and you can name any player, male or female, from around the world who you think is the best at that particular skill, okay?
Okay.
Build your ultimate cricketer. First person, who would you have for power hitting?
Sophie Devine.
Very nice. Catching?
Georgia Wareham.
Ground fielding?
Megan Shute.
Death bowling?
Sophie Eccleston.
Variations?
Maybe Sam Curran.
Innovation?
I'd want to say Laura Harris, but AB de Villiers was always a good one.
Power play player, so batter or bowler you choose.
Oh, good one. Nat Siva. She can cover both.
And finally, tactician.
Meg Lanning, one of the best I've ever played with in the game. Meg Lanning or Ray Chains?
Wow, I think it's been unanimous, Meg Lanning, so far, yeah. Just about. And you were nearly our first one to do an all-female lineup, almost.
I know. I was going to, and then come on, the boys deserve some credit, okay?
Totally. And you're not alone. Everyone had to chuck some of the blokes in there. So, no, you did very well. Thank you for that.
No worries.
Most importantly, you picked two players who've been previous guests on Power Play. So soon we'll have an all-star Build Your Ultimate Cricketer Power Play 11.
Great. That's awesome.
Yeah. Grace, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And we're wishing you all the very best for the future.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Always glad to have a chat.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, that was just a superb chat with Grace Harris. You know, Valks, it's like asking us to choose between our kids in terms of which of our guests we found the most fun so far. We've had so many great names on the show. We've loved all of them, of course. Ladies who are listening, we love you all the same. But Grace Harris, I think, was the one who made us laugh probably the most. She's definitely not holding back when it comes to talking about her life off the field and just the joy with which she experiences playing professional sport, which I found so refreshing because it is such serious business now. We know it's about winning. It's about points tables and rankings and how much money you go for at an auction, perhaps. And just to speak to somebody who can see the lighter side and who doesn't mind sharing that, I just found that so great. I don't know, Valks, if you can pick out a favorite part of that, but almost everything she said just made me want to laugh.
I just love her and enjoyed the whole chat. And I think what you say is really important about her seeing the lighter side, not taking herself too seriously, not taking the game too seriously, and the fact that it works for her. And I think this Australian team have actually embraced that. I can remember during the T20 World Cup in South Africa, she took a screamer of a catch in, I think it was Port Elizabeth against Sri Lanka. And, you know, that was just the talk of the game afterwards because she'd sort of pulled off this fantastic catch. And Elisa Healy did the press conference afterwards and she was sort of asked a lot about her. And she just said, you know, Grace is Grace. And she sort of found her way in this game. And we just embrace that. We love to have her around this side. I mean, she said, don't get me wrong, she knows her game inside out. She's a complete professional when it comes to her cricket. But that is able to go hand in hand with this wonderful personality who doesn't stop talking around the camp, who, you know, keeps everyone's spirits up and that kind of thing, and who just sort of has that lighter side to them. I think the fact that that's embraced by the team around her and enjoyed, I think that's, you know, really important.
Yeah, definitely. I also think that there's a nice way of balancing it for her, because even when she spoke about that game that she won for UP Warriors, where they needed, Delhi needed 10 runs to win off the last over, she kind of said, oh, well, you know, I just thought they needed 10, so let me just give it a go and see what happens, which almost to a degree maybe sells her own skill set short, because as she said, pace off was the thing at the time. There was an excellent piece of fielding in that over as well. But she's not just a happy-go-lucky cricketer. She's a serious professional who we can see and we know takes the game, I want to say seriously, but I don't know if she would like that word, takes the game as seriously as she needs to take it. And I found that reflection particularly honest when we asked her about Australia and the chasing pack, as we like to call them, where she said it's not a case of a gap or anything like that, but it's about knowing how to play big moments better. We had Laura Wolfart on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, who said exactly that. If South Africa wants to win a World Cup, we've got to play the big moments better. And I mean, that applies across many South African teams, except of course the Springboks. But you see where they're getting that sort of ideology from. So I think that Australia recognize, and maybe because the Big Bash is such a good league and it's been going for so long, that the players really know how to play situations like that. Because I don't think that players in other countries, maybe the 100 now in the WPL in a couple of years' time, provide the opportunity. That was the other thing Laura Wolfart mentioned to us, is if we're playing more competitive, high-pressure cricket more often, then we're going to know what to do in those situations. And I think Grace Harris epitomized that with what she said about Australia, the winning mindset. And look, we say the chasing pack are catching up. We hoped that Bangladesh, who've done so phenomenally well in the last few months, would pull off a big upset at some point. And they certainly came close. We saw a hat-trick in one of the T20s, some good batting. I think they'll be disappointed, but I suppose the gap, whether we want to fictionalize it or not, it's still there, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think for all of her joking and the fun things that she says, she actually produces some great pearls of wisdom, Grace Harris. She said she doesn't believe in superstition. She doesn't believe in aura, so to speak, or, you know, some mystical reason why this Australian team is so good. It's winning those clutch moments. And also, you know, she was really realistic. She was saying as other teams' resources improve, their play will improve. Cricket will become even more competitive. I mean, that makes perfect sense, but it's Australia's ability to recognise that and respond in any given situation that has been their strength for so long. And so, you know, so long as they continue to recognise it, can continue to be their strength. I think I get really fascinated by, you know, the mindset of champion players and her sort of when going back to that UP Warriors match against Delhi Capitals and her sort of saying, I just took winning and losing off the table, you know, in my mind, it wasn't going to happen. So forget about that. Just do what you got to do. And I think, you know, for her, that clearly works because it takes away all that pressure and expectation and all the stuff that can mess with your mindset in that real clutch moment. And I think perhaps Australia are able to do that as well. It's not like carry around this weight of expectation as world beaters. They've been doing that for a very long time now. It's respond to what gets dished up to you in a competitive situation every time. And that seems to be where they're winning time and time again. So it was just so insightful, I think, to get those reflections from her, from someone who's actually within it. And I really enjoyed that very much.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to go around the cricketing world a little bit, we've seen New Zealand are having a pretty rough time of it against England. And Sophie Devine, who was on the Power Play podcast not so long ago, almost said that this series would act as a measure of where New Zealand are. You've watched them. You've been covering the series in the long and dark hours of the English winter. I mean, can we still call it winter? You guys said spring, but oh, I don't know.
It's most definitely winter. I can confirm.
It's winter. Should they be worried? I mean, here's a New Zealand team that look like they're really struggling, that can't grab those pressure moments.
Yeah, look, I think from what Sophie Devine told us, they're not worried per se in the fact that, I mean, she was pretty pragmatic. She was like, this is going to take time. You know, they're not expecting things to turn around and to be a, you know, very well-resourced, you know, England side, you know, that's got a massive population to draw on. We spoke about that quite recently. You know, she was quite pragmatic about New Zealand's chances of catching up or, you know, beating sides like that is going to take time. They had England on the ropes in that first ODI. I mean, they were 6 wickets down for not even 80 runs. And then Amy Jones and Charlie Dean produced this record-breaking 130-run partnership. And that just got England, you know, back in the game and you know, won it for them, basically. And I think, again, sort of, I guess England's starting to do that, play the situation that you're dealt and you know, sort of get on with it. And so they were able to sort of deal with some really difficult circumstances that New Zealand threw at them. Sophie Devine wasn't playing that game. She suffered a quad injury in the fourth T20I. So Amelia Kerr captained in the last T20 and also that first ODI. So I guess that's a little bit of development and growth for this side that we're seeing. She's very experienced, but she's still only, I think, 23 thereabouts. And so her first, you know, experience of captaining her side in ODIs, you know, that's sort of showing that they are thinking ahead to the future post, you know, Sophie Devine and Susie Bates, whenever they decide to retire. So, and then they've got, you know, some young players coming through. Izzy Gaze scored a half century in that last T20I. She's only 19. She's, you know, new wicketkeeper for them. And so, you know, they're developing talent there. So I think, it is, like she said, I mean, she's on the ground. She knows it better than anyone. It's going to take time for them to be able to, you know, really compete with sides like your England's, your Australia's, your India's.
Yeah, absolutely. Elsewhere, I suppose, if we just come back home here to South Africa, where the series against Sri Lanka, I think, threw up, I mean, of course, Sri Lanka beat South Africa in the T20 World Cup opener last year. So surprise is perhaps the wrong word. But we've seen the South Africa with Laura Wolfart, the one that scored her first T20 century, and then the South Africa without Laura Wolfart. And they were two very different South Africas. So you mentioned succession plans. Nadine de Klerk was captaining in Laura's absence. She was ill for the second game. And it does seem as though that kind of dearth of leadership is going to be something that needs addressing. So South Africa will play that series and potentially one more. I've heard a whisper that they might be headed off to India just ahead of the T20 World Cup, but they actually don't have a lot of game time. This is potentially the last bit of actual game time before the T20 World Cup. Of course, I think we say this on every show. We don't know if Hilton Marang is going to take them to the tournament or not, but it's looking ever likelier because time is running out to appoint another coach. So that's another kind of interesting cricketing development that we've had on the boil for the last couple of weeks. And my last takeaway, because we'll be very close to the T20 World Cup qualifier. That's a tournament that's close to my heart because Zimbabwe missed out on qualifying for the last T20 World Cup because they lost to Ireland by, I think, 4 runs. And to miss out on playing in essentially your home World Cup, because it was in South Africa, by 4 runs, that's going to hurt so, so badly. So I'm tipping them and Sri Lanka as the favorites to come through that T20 World Cup qualifier. We all know I'm most of the time wrong, so I'm sure it's going to be another team. But Zimbabwe hosted Papua New Guinea women's team recently. And I mean, first of all, it's fabulous that a team like Papua New Guinea is getting to tour in Africa and getting to tour a full member country. And they lost a couple of games, so that doesn't bode too well for Zimbabwe. But we'll be keeping an eye on that World Cup qualifier. It's a really important tournament because there are only 10 teams, and we know that makes for very competitive World Cup cricket. And getting there is difficult, and it's a long road to get there. So there are lots of interesting teams to look out for. Thailand are among them as well. I'm interested to see how they perform. And yeah, Vox, I don't know, who's your tip? Because I'm always wrong. So maybe you're going to get the teams to go through.
Oh, look, I don't know. I'd just be really interested to see. Like you say, these tournaments throw up wonderful stories, you know, in terms of these sides that we don't get to see play all that often until, you know, you get to qualifying and then, you know, you see them at the World Cup, and there's always sort of wonderful stories to be, you know, seen and heard there. I mean, I'm with you. I would love to see Zimbabwe, you know, go through for, you know, the reasons that you mentioned. But I mean, and Thailand as well. We have seen them at a World Cup not that long ago. And like I say, there was, you know, some wonderful sort of stories there. And so, yeah, look, I'm not going to tip anyone. I feel like I just don't know enough, really, because we see these sides play relatively rarely. But I will be really interested to see how those matches go and can't wait to sort of unpick some of them with you next time.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one more very good reason that I am going to say that Zimbabwe cannot get away without qualifying, and that is that their men's team will not play at an ICC event until at least 2026. They missed out on the 2023 World Cup. We're very close to the T20 World Cup 2024. They are the only full member nation that will not be in attendance. They lost out to Uganda. Uganda's women are also playing in the T20 World Cup qualifier. So the growth of cricket there has been really interesting. And Zimbabwe's women, I mean, I spoke with Doc Mukushlani, who is the MD of Zimbabwe cricket, not so long ago. We had a piece with him on Cricket Info where he said, you know, the women are the ones that we have to look to because otherwise our cricket is losing a little bit of international relevance. So it's up to them. It's so often up to the women of Zimbabwe to do all sorts of things, from, you know, economic development to being the breadwinners of families and all kinds of things. And now it's up to the women's cricket team to keep their cricket alive and to keep themselves prominent on a global stage. So really, I'm looking forward to watching them go for it. I'm just going to like fly the flag for all the African countries here because we don't see too much of them, as you say. We'll be covering that tournament as closely as we can, keeping an eye on the developments and bringing you all the news and maybe even some guests from some of the players that are participating in that event. Until then, it's all systems go. Build up to the T20 World Cup and some very interesting series along the way. We really hope you enjoyed listening to Grace Harris as much as we did. We hope you had a great laugh. And we will catch up with you here on ESPN Cricket Info Power Play soon.